Golf Smarter number 153 for November 17, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
TPI certified fitness instructor, Lynn Anderson.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter Podcast. Stay tuned for the end of the show because we'll announce three winners who will each receive the 15-Minute Golf DVD by Lance McWilliams. Each day I receive emails from listeners who are getting shut out from playing golf because of the winter weather that's starting to hit. Of course, there are many of us in the southern part of the U.S., or even those in the southern hemisphere, who can play golf all year long. But as Gary Gilbert, journalism director at Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, that's Michigan, he just wrote into the Golf Smarter Facebook group, there are two seasons here, golf season and preparing for golf season. By the way, have you joined our Golf Smarter group yet? In just a short amount of time, we've got almost 90 participants exchanging ideas and comments to the questions that we post each week on Facebook. Anyway, Lynn Anderson has been through the TPI certification. That's the Titleist Performance Institute certification. And she's going to address off-season conditioning. And as an FYI, over the winter, I plan to speak to other TPI-certified fitness instructors, including Mindy Boyson, who will report to us on the recent World Golf Fitness Summit. But for now, welcome to Golf Smarter, Lynn.
Thank you, Fred.
How are you?
Great, great.
Can you tell me what the Titleist Performance Institute is all about?
Yeah, it's the ability for anybody that's certified under Titleist Performance to find physical issues with a golfer. They have directly linked swing flaws with biomechanical issues. So it's pretty neat how they've been able to really kind of bridge a gap that a lot of people haven't been able to do. They've kind of identified 12 common swing flaws. They know, and we know, there's multiple swing issues going on, but they've really identified what they consider the top 12. And then, like I said, you can go either way. You can, as a golf professional, look at the swing, identify the swing flaw, and then do some biomechanical testing to verify, is it a body issue or is it a swing issue? And vice versa, a trainer can do a biomechanical screening, and then if there's some issues that are showing up there, they can link them to the swing issue.
And how does one become certified?
You do need to. They have multiple sites around the area. It's a weekend-long program. They cram as much information in you in 2 days, and then you take a test. And if and when you pass the test, then you are certified. There are different levels, too. There's level 1, 2, and 3. So there's multiple levels of certifications. And there's also multiple avenues you can take. They have a medical field. They have a fitness avenue. They have a golf professional avenue. So it kind of fits anybody that wants to, again, incorporate the body and the swing. So it's pretty neat.
Wow. And once you get certified, then you're out on your own, or you're always part of the, I guess you get to hang on your window that you are a Titleist Performance Institute certified instructor, and you go out and you're independent at that point, or you're always working with Titleist?
Yeah, I mean, you are independent, yet they have multiple resources, which is, again, a tribute to them that you can use. I mean, I have access to them physically by cell phone as a certified you know, Titleist. I have, you know, people should really get on their website because it just will blow you away with the multiple of layers they have done with information that you can gather. I mean, if I have any questions or issues or see something kind of, you know, a little different than I haven't seen, I can go into the website, you know, kind of Google it, so to speak, and most likely there'll be pages and pages of information that I can draw upon, you know, to either educate myself about that or certain drills that I should be incorporating. I mean, multiple things. So again, you're not just really out there all by yourself, so to speak, but yet, you know, you are independent too. So.
So when you were describing the swing flaws being matched with biomechanical issues, so we're really talking about the combination of physical attributes and what mistakes, and help me if I'm getting this right or wrong, how what your body position and your body flexibility and strengths are, and tie that to the golf swing?
Yes, exactly.
Really? It's an exactly? I did that right?
Yeah, you're very good, Fred. You're listening. Yeah, exactly.
I'm exhausted. Phew.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple, and yet obviously this golf swing is very complex, the swing itself, if you broke it down biomechanically and you know, if you had a degree like that, like I do, to break it down. But they, you know, I mean, you take something like everyone's familiar with, the dreaded lateral move or what's called a slide or a sway in the golf swing. You know, if I see that going on, I know two or three, you know, screenings I can put these guys on right away and then either rule in or rule out. Yeah, you've got some, you know, internal hip rotation limitations going on that's going to cause you to lateral sway all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, don't pay me to do a, you know, show you drills. We got to get you in the gym and give you one or two exercises to, you know, overcome this limitation. Then we can bridge it to the swing. You'll never accomplish it in the swing till we address it as a for a bot, you know, in the gym, so to speak.
Well, it's really, I guess that's the most prevalent issue is the sway, that slide from left to right for a right-handed golfer. I'm assuming it is. That's why you brought it up. But it's so interesting because in the first year plus that I was doing the Golf Smarter podcast, I suffered from that and didn't realize it. But what I did know is that I had a lot of lower back pain after a round of golf.
Yeah.
And once it was identified and I was able to quiet down my lower half of my body in concert with the fact that I was doing core strengthening classes a couple times a week, I rarely have back pain anymore at all.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
It's truly amazing. Plus the fact that I've added distance to my golf shots.
Yes. Which is always a plus.
Yeah.
We all are.
As long as I
that.
Recognize that I've added distance to each club so that I can know what I'm hitting it, the distance wise.
Right.
So so you have common swing flaws, and those 12 swing flaws that you identify, are those all associated with various aches and pains?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So my elbow hurts.
Yep, most likely you got, which one, right or left?
Left, I'm right-handed.
Left, and is it out or inner elbow?
Identify.
Outer,
so if it's
like the, on top?
So if my if I'm standing up with my hands down by my side,
yes.
It's towards the front on the outside, right?
Okay, so at impact, most likely what's happening is the old dreaded kind of flying elbow. So you've got a breakdown in the left elbow at impact. If I freeze-framed your impact position, if I drew a line down the left shoulder, starting at the left shoulder down, straight down, your arms, hands, and left thigh should all be in line. And most likely, if you drew a line, your left elbow is going to be bowing out from that line.
Hmm.
Okay.
Really?
So
it's not a grip issue, it's really an alignment
issue.
Well,
it could. You'd want to look at the grip, and that could be caught right, you know.
I'm just making that up.
But good point, though. Exactly. Why are you doing that? You got to look at that, obviously. So, mm-hmm. Yes, you'd first look at the grip. Could be posture. It could be multiple of things. But I'm just telling you, at impact, that's what's happening, which is causing your elbow pain. So, again, that's why this is so crucial. I would actually be checking on limitations actually with your lower body, too, because maybe you're not firing your lower body. The lower body's getting stuck. The hands and club are, colliding with the hips because the hips aren't being cleared out. Mm-hmm. So the elbow now has to bend and get out of its way.
Mm-hmm.
The
That's
hips or the lower half didn't get out of the way. Huh. Yeah. So maybe it's more lower. I mean, you see the bent elbow and you think right away, elbow, okay, it's an upper body issue, but it could just almost more likely be a lower body issue.
It's a new pain, too. I mean, it's only been
okay.
in the last month. And, it mostly pops up in sand shots and thick rough, which
yep.
I have a lot of those.
Oh, my theory is just don't hit there.
Oh, okay.
So you won't have
You've
them.
Made it so simple. Well, it's great to talk to you, Lynn. It's like,
come on.
Just sum it right up there. Just stay away from that. That's so easy.
Exactly. Come on.
Do most people, when they come to you or come to a certified Titleist Performance Institute instructor, realize that their pains, aches and pains, may be associated with something in their swings?
You know,
or is it like aha moments that happens when you say, you know what? I bet you're having a pain right here because look at your swing.
Yeah, it's a ha-ha moment. Like, how do you know? Yep, never seen you play, you know, a shot, but I've seen one swing, and I can tell you. Or if I see the chicken wing, and I'll ask, do you have elbow? No, no. You know, well, it's not if you are, it's when you are. You will get it.
Hmm.
I mean, that's how dramatic I put it, and it's true. I mean, I can bet my house on it. You will get it.
Oh, don't do that. This is not a time of your life where anybody should be betting their house.
Well, that's how, well, this is true, but that's how, you know, how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So again, then we have to, then I got to do some screenings. Where is it coming from? What's the originator of that move? Why are they doing that? You know? And again, if there's no body limitations and they're yet chicken winging, but nothing's going on, then you know it's a swing issue. It's just they don't know that that's the position, you know, that they need that arm to be straight. So now you work it through a golf drill.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know, I mean, I put it like it's like going to a doctor, you know.
Right.
The doctor gives you multiple tests to find out the root of the issue. He just wouldn't say, you know, see a little something and go, oh, for sure you have that, you know. Like a sore throat, oh, okay, it's you know, sore throat. Maybe it's a virus that's going on in the test. You know, who knows? So you have to check it all to really find the root of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you can get your players to advance much quicker. You know, digging up the wrong hole, you're not going to find what you want to find.
So then, being a we've had a lot of golf fitness people on this program, and we've talked about various exercises and stretches and flexibility and yoga and Pilates and those things. But I guess what I'm understanding is that as a certified instructor for Titleist Performance Institute, that you're a golf instructor who also has a full comprehension of the physical aspects of how to help somebody physically, both in pain and in flexibility.
Yeah, I have that.
You incorporate all that stuff.
Yeah, you know. Right. We have a unique situation because I have both those elements and I'm, you know, certified and degrees in those. But, you know, how they also with the Titleist and they, you know, do is they're promoting relationships and teams. So you get the fitness director or the fitness Titleist Performance, and then you have the swing coach, and they work as a team to, you know, do the proper screenings and figure out exactly what the issue is. Where here, obviously, we don't need the two because I'm two in one,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. But, yes, that's how you would do it if you didn't have those those two together, combined like that.
So, and you work with Totally Driven and Andy Thompson, who was on the program a couple of episodes back. And so you're able to, Andy's, you know, got the whole club fitting system going on, and he's got the full range of everything at Totally Driven.
Yes.
But you're able to incorporate the Titleist Performance Institute as well with what he offers?
Yeah, yep, exactly. So then you've got, you know, your other components, which obviously is the equipment side of it, and Totally Driven and Andy handles that piece of it. So there is that team atmosphere here. Absolutely, because we also incorporate the mental side of it. So we have multiple, you know, components under one roof.
Right, and you're near the Twin Cities of Minnesota.
Minnesota, yes.
Right. So what happens in the off season with you guys?
Busy, very busy.
Tell me.
We're actually an inside facility.
You're an indoor facility. Well, that makes sense since you're indoors most of the year.
Don't rub it in, Fred, yes, it's true. And we do have reciprocal.
I'm only grinning, I'm not snickering, I promise.
Okay, good. You're lucky. No. And we do have outside reciprocal. We just had a putting clinic outside last night. We got one Saturday. So we have multiple things outside, but we are an indoor facility.
And you have Jeff Mangum. Andy's a Jeff Mangum disciple, as well as being certified with Putting Zone.
We both are Putting Zone certified under Jeff Mangum.
Oh, we're all big fans of Jeff.
Yes, yeah. It's great.
When people come to you, are they, most of the time, are they reacting to an injury, or are they trying to prevent injury? Or do they even realize that, I should be trying to prevent injuries?
I mean, they don't know that.
They don't know, sure.
Oh, they wait till the pain, unfortunately. And the body works. I wish it was a little different, but you're going to do something repetitively for multiple days to weeks to months, sometimes to years before the body will actually feel the pain. I wish it was the opposite. Once you did something kind of incorrectly, the body would shoot a warning sign so you could correct it right away.
That'd be ideal. It would really hurt.
Yeah, it would be ideal. Right. So, no, most humans, we wait till the pain and then go, I got this kink in my neck and I've been dealing with this, you know, driving pain through my arm, you know. Well, that most likely is because of something you've been doing over time, over and over and over and over. So, but, again, we have great success with people that, you know, come in with pain. We get them on the program, again, because we're identifying the strengths and the weaknesses, putting them on a program that's very specific to them. It's not a cookie cutter. They're finding results, and they're finding that they're waking up pain-free, playing pain-free. I mean, isn't that what it's all about?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
So if this pain in my left elbow has been building up over time, I suspect that it's not going to go away quickly either.
No, unfortunately,
I didn't want to hear that. Chronic.
Yeah, more of a chronic, icing, massaging the area, limiting that movement, you know, where you can try to avoid it for a long period of time.
Well, I'm in a 12-month-a-year area of golf, so does that mean I should be moving to Minnesota during the winter so I can avoid playing golf for 6 months?
Well, we welcome you here, obviously, anytime,
right.
Fred, but I won't go that far.
I'll tell you something. There was a period of time during the 90s that the Minnesota Twins were a client of mine.
Okay.
And so I would go back a couple times a year during baseball season, and when I first got my program set up at the Metrodome, I went out. It was in May, and we had night games, obviously. And I remember renting a bicycle one afternoon because I wasn't playing golf at the time. I rented a bicycle and went riding for the entire day. I mean, I just rode for hours and hours, and it was a glorious, glorious day. And I came back. At the end of the day, I was at the ballpark, and I was working with Mark Weber, a guy who, you know, was with the marketing department for the Twins. And I said, wow, what a spectacular day. If you had days like this most of the year, they'd call it California. And his response was, well, that's why we have winter, to keep the riffraff out.
Yeah, there you go.
So don't tell me you'd welcome me there. I don't believe you in 1 second.
Well, you have to go through an interview process. Well, you know.
And your Germanic roots are from where? So let's talk about different exercises. How do you feel about Pilates? I'm going to whack them off the list.
I do it myself. Yep, every Friday. I love it. I think it's great. Again, I do have some issues, so I take that to the Pilates. There's certain things in Pilates that I know that aren't good for me. That's the only stickler. I mean, not every general population can just jump in a Pilates class and go through all that. I mean, so I would advise getting a screening through a fitness person, a trainer, a physical therapist, something where you know, and they'll help you let you know what you shouldn't be doing and why and all that, so you go in. But yes, Pilates is excellent.
And what about yoga?
Yoga is absolutely great, too. You know, it's kind of the same thing, just going in with knowing more your limitations and strengths and what have you, so you're not, you don't hurt yourself. But again, and to me, I've done some yoga, and to me that's a little bit more the mental and getting within, which we know as golfers is very important. We got to be able to turn our mind off and turn it off, you know, turn it on, turn it off. So, yep, yoga's great also.
And do you find one being a better or more difficult discipline to adhere to than the other?
You know, I think people individually are going to find one harder over the other, not across the board like that.
And what about advantages for a golfer, one versus the other?
No, I think, again, they're both can be very positive, and yet if you've got a weakness and you jump in and you don't know it, you can hurt yourself. So, you know, and a good instructor is going to be a key to that, too, where they're really looking at people's forms and walking around the classroom and really individually, even though it may be a group lesson, they're walking around and really taking eye of your technique.
And let's go to a different extreme there on exercise, which is, you know, I mean, golf is one thing, but you really have to combine it with some sort of exercise. Weight bearing or resistance workouts.
Yeah, I think, again, they all have their place. That has a place. Again, our kind of philosophy is you got to build the house from the ground up. So the ground or the basic level is stability. Stability is the stabilizing joints. Mobility, which is movement of joints. Balance and posture. And almost across the board, there's going to be weaknesses in one of at least of those four areas. So you've got a foundation that isn't strong, and then you've got to identify those and deal with those and make your foundation as strong as possible so you can build up. The next level then would be more power and strength. You know, then your next level will be more explosive movements, ballistic movements. Then you're working on endurance. You know, so you've got kind of a pyramid or a, you know, level, so to speak. So, again, someone that has maybe some issues in the foundation, they grab weights and doing some more power, explosive, any work like that. Injuries would be my number one concern. Mm-hmm. Two, again, you're building off of a weak foundation, so that's not always good. You're probably building. The biggest thing with injuries isn't weakness, it's imbalance. So if my right hamstring is very strong and my left is really weak, that's where you're going to more so see injury than if I had just a weak right hamstring and a weak left hamstring.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. So again, I just grab weights and just, you know, pump iron. I mean, I could be just increasing the imbalance. I'm making the strong stronger, and I'm making the weak a little stronger, but you still are going to have the same imbalance going on.
I'm not one for weight-bearing exercises. I don't know why. It's just never connected with me, working out with weights and stuff. But I do like to swim,
yes,
which is a tremendous amount of resistance, and it's balanced I got to believe it's balanced.
Yep.
But it's not something that I'm really pushing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, you know, I don't try to go as fast as I possibly can for as long as I possibly can. I'll probably do a steady pace for a half hour or so. So that helps, obviously, in endurance.
Yes, absolutely.
But does it also help in other ways?
Yeah, like you said, swimming? I mean, when you're talking about endurance, you're talking about the cardiac, you know, the heart, basically. So and the heart is a muscle. So you're working, your number one muscle, the heart. So that obviously is good. When you talk about night non-weight bearing, you're talking obviously that you're not pounding joints. So running would be a weight bearing. Swimming would be a non-weight bearing. Biking would be non-weight bearing. So anytime you can avoid heavy joint pounding, I think is always better.
So that would fall under running, wouldn't it?
Running is a really weight bearing. I mean,
and
probably,
pounding.
Oh,
serious pounding.
Serious, because you're taking your weight, plus you can almost double it because you're pounding, and all those joints are just pounding away. So, yeah, I do not advise weight bearing. You may do that once in a blue moon to kind of shock the system, so to speak, but really overall, I would not recommend that at all. Swimming, and that's great. Pred is one of the number one. Training, yeah, so good job. Keep it up.
Thank you. Yeah. So, all right, there's the misnomer that people love to throw in your face when you play golf. Golf isn't an exercise, but if you walk, you're walking, let's call it 4 miles, if you walk the course.
Yeah.
That's about 4 miles, right?
Miles,
I mean, it doesn't matter what tee you're playing from. You still have to walk
by
the back tees.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I love to walk golf courses, and where I live in Northern California, it's not necessarily flat around here. We have a lot of hills. So, you know, there are times where I get to the ball and I need to take a break because I'm huffing and puffing just because of the hills.
Sure.
But I don't carry my bag, so that's the weight resistance, because I don't like what my back feels like at the end of that. So I use a push cart.
Yep, very good.
But walking 4 miles on a golf course over a period of day, that's exercise, isn't it?
Oh,
come on.
Yeah, I would dispute anyone that, yeah, exactly. Absolutely, it's exercise. And like I said, the swing itself is such a complex movement for the body to do, you know, mm-hmm. and then to do it over and over and repeat it over and over and
at least 150
manner.
Times, yeah.
Yeah, one fit right, you know.
Well, I mean, if you're taking one practice swing and you shoot a 90, okay, so then you're taking at least 120 swings because you're not swinging like on the putting.
You're putting.
Right, exactly. So you're taking, and if you take two practice swings mm-hmm. per shot, I mean, that's a lot of swinging.
Oh, absolutely. And you're swinging anywhere from 50 to 100 and some miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
An obstacle, you're swinging mm-hmm. around your body, and you're trying to do it in a control, you know, a balanced stability, mobility, staying in the right posture, all of that. Yeah, yeah, good luck.
Have you come across anybody that would suggest, hey, you know, I like doing this sort of exercise, or I prefer this, and you have said, you know, that's really not a good exercise if you want to play golf?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or probably more so there's sports that aren't all that good. Not so much exercise, again, unless they don't have good stability and mobility, and they're, you know, trying to bench press a lot. You know what I mean? Doing some heavy lifting or that kind of stuff. But there's definitely sports that aren't really good cross sports for golfers, if you're taking your game serious, per se. And there's other ones that are better suited, you know, for cross training.
And what sports would those be? That's really interesting. Heavy bodybuilding.
Yeah, bodybuilding would not be good, and I've had a few of those in.
Really, I can't remember ever seeing a bodybuilder out of a golf course. You can't. They can't swing. They can't. They have no flexibility.
No, they have no flexibility, and their chest
a funny
and neck are so thick, and you can't get them rotated, and I had a football player from the University of Minnesota, big linesman, trying to pick up this game. I tell you, tell him that it's not an athletic sport. I mean, that guy was sweating after his lesson, just dripping wet and frustrated as all get out because he's used to success and he was not having the success he wanted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, heavy lifting, what have you. I was actually a tennis pro before golf, and that gets in the way, you know, forehand where I'm bringing my tennis racket excessively inside, you know, that is not the path of the golf swing. So I always struggle with my golf takeaway as being pretty excessively getting it inside too quick because of my tennis move.
Really? So tennis and golf really are not complements?
No.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
Wow.
Yeah. So you would, you know, want to stay away from that, obviously. Again, if you're serious. I mean, you know. But, yeah.
And I'm sure we can spend another half hour, if we had it, to just talk about nutrition.
Yes.
And how that impacts a golfer and how to... actually, if you can, why don't you give us a great in-round nutrition tip? What's your favorite?
Eat every three holes. So you're a grazer.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us, if we're lucky, we may grab something, a hot dog or something, in between nine. But most of us will just grab a beer or, you know, something very non-nutritional and then after the round. But I tell you what, again, your body is burning a lot of calories. I don't care if you're walking. Obviously, you're walking, it's more. But if you're not, you still are burning. You're out in the sun, and you need to eat, you know, and it doesn't have to be big. When I say grazing, that's what I'm referring to, something little, some peanuts, you know, a handful of peanuts every third hole, you know, a bite of a peanut butter sandwich, a bite or two, you know, and then always drinking water or Gatorade. So, most of us don't realize, but the backside, that's where I blow up. I'm 13, 14, 15, I just blow up. I don't seem, most likely that's because of the They didn't graze. They're hungry. Their body's starving and it's breaking down. And their endurance is they're losing their endurance and what have you. So that would be my number one. And I think people would be very surprised how they can keep their energy up all the way through 18 holes if they kept that rule in mind.
I'll tell you, it's a fact for me. I've learned that I cannot eat on the ninth. At the turn.
No, wait till exactly. No, first of all, you start getting fatigued a little bit, 7, 8, 9, and you may not even realize it because you're not sweating like you're playing basketball or something. So it kind of sneaks up on you, doesn't it? And then you pound down something big on 9, and really the body takes a while to digest it and take it in and then build up the energy that you need. So by the time that's happening, that's like 16 or 17, you know? So it's really pretty much too late at that point.
It's so interesting that you say that because I've noticed before I started doing, and it's interesting you say every three holes, I just pretty much graze through an entire round. But before I was doing that, if I grabbed a turkey sandwich or a hot dog at the turn, not only would I have three terrible holes right after that, but then it would get to be where I would hit the wall on the 15th or 16th. You know, or as my friends would say, the wheels are starting to fall off.
Well, that's
yeah. Yep. And it's more about your body, and your mind just getting fatigued than it is about, you just can't handle it. Probably
exactly.
a nutrition element to it.
Very
I think
important.
That's an excellent tip. Thank you.
You bet.
Lynn Anderson of Totally Driven and a certified Titleist Performance Institute instructor. This has been really interesting, and I hope that we can get some tips from you as far as getting some more Titleist people to come on and talk with us. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Fred.
And now it's time to announce the winners of the DVD by Lance McWilliams, 15-Minute Golf. Congratulations to Charlene Richardson of Pasadena, California, Dennis Nose of Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and Matthew Elders of Kingwood, Texas. You'll all be receiving in the mail your free DVD by Lance McWilliams called 15-Minute Golf. Now, if you didn't win and you're still interested in that DVD, check them out at 15minutegolf.com And of course, if you haven't heard it yet, you can get the full story from Lance on the October 14th, 2008 episode of Golf Smarter. That's 15minutegolf.com. In an effort to always improve how you play golf, I think that our next giveaway is simple, ingenious, and a must-have in your practice arsenal, the golf ring. Whether you use it for putting, chipping, or pitching, check out what Dr. Bob Winters said about the value of target-oriented golf, and the golf ring is a fabulous tool to help promote and enhance that skill. Go to golfsmarter.com and click on the contest tab to enter to win the 6-foot golf ring. Deadline for entries is November 28th, 2008. And while you're filling out the entry to win the golf ring, click on the banner at the top of the contest page, because since we've done this interview, the owner of the golf ring has upped his offer to Golf Smarter listeners. Now, when you purchase the golf ring and use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER, you receive a 15% discount, and they're going to throw in the spot ring for free. The golf ring is a 6-foot circle, and the spot ring is an 18-inch circle that you can create a target that really helps to isolate your focus. So you can win the 6-foot circle, or as a Golf Smarter listener, get the 15% discount and the free 18-inch circle too. Just make sure you use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER at thegolfring.com, thegolfring.com. We close today's program with a piece of golf history and trivia. This week is the 46th anniversary of the first ever hole-in-one on a par 5. November 15th, 1962, Larry Bryce recorded this amazing feat on a 480-yard fifth hole at Hope Country Club in Arkansas. Now, the only other person on record to do this is Sean Lynch, who nailed the hole-in-one on a dogleg 496-yard 17th at Tame Valley Golf Course in Cristo, England. That was 1995. So we now know that a birdie is 1 under par, eagle 2 under par, double eagle 3 under par, and recording a 4 under par hole-in-one on a par 5 is called a condor. Next week, speed golf world record holder and author of I've Got 99 Swing Thoughts But Hit the Ball Ain't One, Christopher Smith. If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Hi, I'm Jeff Mangum, putting instructor and founder of theputtingzone.com, inviting you to join me each week on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast. I'll give you short tips, drills, and exercises on how to use your brain to putt your best ever. So before you head out to the links each weekend, make sure you download the Friday version of Golf Smarter Tips, free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com. Together we can learn how to roll 'em and hole 'em.